Welcome to Reading the Grid, the podcast fueling your Formula One passion. Each week, we explore the stories behind books, movies, and shows that highlight the history of this dynamic sport. Buckle up for a fast-paced journey through Formula One. Now let's jump into it. This week, we're diving into episodes 6 through 8 of Drive to Survive Season 7. In episode 6, titled Wheels of Fortune, Netflix turns the camera toward McLaren team principal Zak Brown as he tries to turn a dream season into a full-blown title challenge, which would ensure McLaren's first constructors' win since 1998, openly gunning to topple Red Bull's dominance and finally come ahead of his CEO rival Christian Horner of Red Bull Racing. On the track, it's billed as Lando Norris versus Max Verstappen for the driver's crown, but the narrative twist is Oscar Piastri. Only in his second F1 season, he refuses to be the quiet teammate to Lando. He announces himself as a contender far sooner than anyone expected, forcing McLaren into that awkward existential choice. Play neutral and risk losing momentum, or back one driver and chase both championships.
This episode very accurately depicts the unexpected wrinkle that Oscar Piastri presents to Lando's hopes to be in the title fight in 2024, and how they navigate the new status quo in their relationship in 3 races, Hungary, Monza, and Baku. It starts in Hungary, which just happened to be the last race we covered for this podcast in 2025, so it is a nice throwback to where we were a year ago. In the words of Will Buxton, how long is this episode? Netflix does a very good job of covering the drama of McLaren not being ready for the title fight just yet. By making a mistake by pitting Lando Norris first, thus ensuring that Oscar Piastri would be second, McLaren created an unwinnable situation for themselves. Their incredibly awkward attempts in reestablishing order met the very human emotions of Lando Norris seeing the win that would have put a dent into Max's lead for the championship being taken away from him. The team refused to be ruthless and sacrifice Oscar's win to better Lando's position in the championship, and it all played out publicly over incredibly uncomfortable radio exchanges between Lando and the team. Ultimately, Lando gave the position back to Oscar. The only revelation that Netflix adds is Christian Horner's comment that I guarantee it that Max wouldn't have swapped, which is true and should be obvious to anyone with a passing knowledge of Max in F1. There is also a reflection from Lando that he cannot think clearly in the car, and there was a possibility that he would not let Oscar through because he did not want to let go of the win.
The tension builds in Monza, where Oscar overtakes Lando on the first turn, which also leads to Charles Leclerc overtaking Lando as well, and ultimately winning the race due to Leclerc's superior skill in nursing his tires and making the one-stop strategy work. William Buxton is back to show criticism that they should never have raced each other, with Lando complaining that Oscar produced a move that he did not expect, and that if he expected it, Oscar would not have had a chance to do it. Spoiler, based on Lando's continued struggles with bottled starts, the plausibility of this statement is extremely doubtful. Zak Brown also claims that he left points on the table, saying that it is ultimately his responsibility.
As an aside, this is where the roles of team principal and CEO become blurred. We have heard the buck stops with me a lot. And in case of Christian Horner and Toto Wolff, both CEOs and team principals of their respective teams in 2024, at least, that makes sense. But McLaren has separate individual as team principal and CEO. And Andrea Stella, McLaren's team principal, is almost invisible, and there is a never indication or discussion of how these duties are separated. Another aside is that this episode devotes sufficient time to celebrating the Monza win with a Ferrari driver winning. They show the track invasion, Italian anthem, Leclerc celebrating and hugging Vasseur and Sainz, coin Leo, mi amor, all the things I did not think they would include in an episode about McLaren. This was such an iconic win that I'm very happy that they covered the aftermath in full.
Me too. I don't know where else they would put it in the season. So I'm glad Ferrari got its due on this one. The Baku race highlights the teamwork between Norris and Piastri, where Lando qualified in P15, not the most shocking qualifying performance of the season, but the only one that did not happen because of penalties. And Oscar in P2. Coincidentally, this is right after they made the decision for Lando to be the number one driver, and then he qualified in P15. Oscar managed to get ahead of Charles Leclerc, who was on pole, and stay ahead due to some great defending from Lando that slowed the cars that were chasing the win. Not surprising, Christian Horner called this race disappointing, as it cemented McLaren ahead of Red Bull and first in the constructors. It bears repeating that going from last to first in 18 months is impressive and a testament to McLaren's prowess, dedication, and teamwork.
This race is also famous for the last-ditch effort of Sergio Perez to achieve a notable result that would keep him in a Red Bull seat for 2025. Baku is such a strong track for him, not for nothing, but we see Oscar Piastri calling him the king of Azerbaijan, as Perez has 2 wins and 5 podiums here, that it was not surprising that he and Carlos Sainz were fighting to get to P2 and overtake Leclerc, who was struggling on his tires, when they collided. And you could see Sergio Perez's career implode in front of your eyes.
Per usual, Netflix usually gets some things right, and they also have their misses. In this episode, they did not once reference the fact that McLaren kept insisting that Lando and Oscar had rules of engagement, which they called papaya rules. This caused a lot of derision on social media, as it sounded silly and made up. But they kept referencing these rules throughout the season. It also did not show Piastri jumping Norris at the start of the Hungary Grand Prix on turn one and securing the lead. The more egregious omission is that they did not acknowledge that Hungary was Oscar Piastri's first win in F1, which he accomplished a lot faster than Lando Norris, who entered F1 in 2019 and didn't win his first race until Miami in 2024.
And the biggest miss from Hungary is the failure to show Max's radio messages. Hungary 2024 is remembered for its radio messages, which made the race exciting as it is hard to overtake on the track. So having Max rage against everything, including having to battle bad strategy, as well as GP, his race engineer, trying to calm him down, but also to put him in his place, telling him that it is childish to try to get a penalty for Lewis Hamilton via radio communication after the little dust up. I understand that the episode was not about Max, but they missed another part of what made Hungary memorable and entertaining. There's also no mention of Magnussen colliding with Gasly in Monza, which added 2 more penalty points to his license, thus accumulating 12 points and being banned for the next race in Baku, which also led in Baku for them not to reference that Magnussen was absent due to his race ban and that Ollie Bearman was driving in his Haas. And that could have been a whole narrative of Ollie Bearman covering for 2 cars since he substituted for Carlos Sainz in Jeddah in Ferrari and now substituted Magnussen in a Haas in the same year.
And he scored points in both races with 2 different cars.
None of that was mentioned at all.
I know, which was really a shame because Ollie started off strong.
He did. And I think maybe it will give him more story arc for the next season. But I think it was a little bit of a missed opportunity.
I agree. It would have been nice if they mentioned that, because I think that's a pretty interesting stat, because I can't remember or think of a rookie who, well, I guess he wasn't even a rookie. He was a replacement driver, sat in for 2 different drivers on 2 different teams and scored points in both. It's pretty impressive.
Very impressive.
Now, my favorite part, we get to give out our superlatives, our best, worst, and most WTF moments. I think one of the things that my superlative for most surprising fact that I forgot was that Zac Brown was on Wheel of Fortune because I love game shows and I think it would be fantastic to be on one of those. So I'm a little jealous that he got his start. And I think it's a great idea to take your winnings from Wheel of Fortune and, you know, buy your first go-kart. So that was pretty neat. What about you, Ina?
That was neat. So I don't know if it's recency bias, but since Christian Horner is no longer on the grid, somehow I kept noticing his commentary the most. And kind of similar, but not as entertaining, was also Will Buxton's commentary that is also missing going forward since he's switched to IndyCar. So for Christian, I have the most prophetic comment. And that is his discussion with the producer, whether he's going to be portrayed as a villain this year. And when pushed, when did that ever happen? He said seasons 1 through 6.
Yeah, I love it because he is our favorite villain.
He is, and he remains so in season 7. But don't you worry, he's joined by others. We've mentioned Flavio Briatore. And in this episode of our podcast, there's somebody else who's going to rear his head. The other superlative, again, that I have to give to Christian's direction, which I call is a best pot stirrer. And that's when he said that out of the two McLaren drivers, he would pick Oscar Piastri over Lando Norris, despite the rumors that Netflix doesn't cover that Red Bull made Lando Norris offer twice and he refused to switch.
Yeah. That's unfortunate. They should have mentioned those. Going back and watching these, I was surprised how much I don't miss Will Buxton.
No. And he
I
is my...
I am so glad we have some fresh blood. And I hope Nico Rosberg takes his place on Netflix for season 8.
This season, we saw a little bit of Jenson Button, so we could use more, but I agree.
Yep.
For that controversial statement person, Nico Rosberg would be great. But before we say goodbye to Will Buxton, he did bring up the fact that Red Bull and Ferrari only succeed when they have a clear number one driver. Have you noticed that he did not say Mercedes?
Well, yes. I think Mercedes and Toto had the history of not having a clear driver between Lewis and Nico. However, 2024 was interesting because Hamilton, who has always been the clear number one at Mercedes since 2016, had already said he was leaving for Ferrari. So I think because we did not know for sure by that point that Antonelli was coming in, I guess that's why he left Mercedes out. Do you have a different theory?
No, it tracked. I also thought it was because of Rosberg, but I also thought that throughout his tenure with Bottas, he was clearly number one, whether they had an official name for him as number one. Even with Russell, maybe they don't call it number one, but he was definitely the leading driver.
Right.
And if you remember when we reviewed episode 3 of season 7, that's how they framed the entire episode, that they were looking to see if George could be the leading driver,
right,
meaning he wasn't in 2024. I think Will Buxton, either he decided to stir something up or Netflix edited something out and it just created a cute little controversy.
It could be. Episode 6, as we've been discussing, was a pretty good one. Episode 7 is titled In the Heat of the Night, which Singapore, you and I have both been to. Singapore hot is a phrase we use quite often in my family. Netflix tried something different, and they handed cameras to 5 drivers: Lando Norris, Alex Albon, George Russell, Charles Leclerc, and Pierre Gasly, because they all grew up together and have been friends, and asked them to film their Singapore Grand Prix weekend from Friday to Sunday. I think on paper, it's a brilliant idea to get the weekend through the eyes of friends who joke, spar, and live the pressure together under the iconic floodlights. However,
the execution doesn't quite match the idea. While the driver cam promises raw, never-before-seen moments, the episode serves up far less actual onboard content that you'd expect and delivers few surprises beyond what fans have already seen or read, instead of a deep verite portrait of the drivers. And by the way, I did not expect Netflix to dive that deep. We get a sense of familiar beats, camaraderie, team tension, race day drama, presented more as a novelty twist than a revelations-packed inside look.
Let's talk about what sets this episode apart from the usual Drive to Survive formula with its focus on the friendship. These aren't just paddock acquaintances. They're shown as genuine friends, although I'm not quite sure all five are as close to each other as Netflix sets them up to be. They definitely roomed each other, shared little slices of their life that you rarely see on a race broadcast. Russell calls Albon the closest friend he has on the grid. Albon, in return, can't resist teasing Russell about money. Despite having a good salary, they still fly commercial most of the time because Russell is pretty tight. Lando is in a different travel league altogether because he's riding on Max Verstappen's private jet. And then Daniel Ricciardo comes along for the ride. You know, you can't tell if he's an F1 driver, if he's just coming off of a holiday.
Absolutely. Well, the hotel sequences become a whole subplot of their own. And I think for us, Aaron, it's probably the most exciting thing because we see the parts of Singapore that we've actually experienced in real life.
Uh-huh.
For instance, Leclerc's Marina Bay Sands Suite, which is the famous surfboard-topped hotel, which I think is beyond ugly, comes with panoramic views and, of course, a grand piano. Lando's room is far less showy. He claims he books the same one every year, not out of superstition, but the hint is there. Russell is clearly at the Ritz-Carlton, which looks remarkably similar to Lando's room, so I'm not sure if that means Lando's in the same hotel. And true to character, Russell travels with his own pillow and duvet for comfort.
The duvet made me laugh.
Yes.
I was not expecting him to travel with his own duvet. Pillow, fine. Duvet, excessive.
He has to go extra. And then Albon doesn't get as much screen time for his accommodation, but his views are spectacular. They eventually show the view from the room, which is great. And then I thought was very funny is that he mentioned, oh, you should see the view from the bathroom. And I thought he was joking. And then they showed the view from the bathroom and it is spectacular. So
yes.
The whole entire hotel sequences was great because I kept trying to figure out which hotels were covered.
Me too. It was a good guessing game to navigate that. Although I still don't know where Pierre was staying out of all of them, but
I don't think he was staying in the Marina Bay area.
Oh, I don't think so either. Cause when he was driving to dinner, he was coming in from somewhere. Singapore as the Grand Prix has the reputation of being the most grueling race on the calendar, and Netflix wastes no time reminding us why. The drivers themselves call it brutal, around 90% humidity and cockpit temperatures that climb towards 60 degrees Celsius. You can almost feel the airless sauna-like pressure through the screen. The night race might look glamorous under the floodlights, but the physical reality is more like running a marathon inside of an oven. The toll shows up almost immediately, especially George Russell. He crashes in practice, an uncharacteristic mistake for someone who's been dialed in. But the heat and constant concentration can push even the sharpest drivers over the limit. It's a moment that triggers a flashback to his 2023 heartbreak in Singapore when he was running P2 and clipped the wall in the final laps. Alex Albon sums it up neatly in a quiet aside. You have to use 100% of your brain here all the time.
And I just have to say, Alex Albon is the unsung hero of this episode because everything he says and does, I think, is endearing and just makes me like him even more.
Do you want to start the Alex Albon chant?
Maybe. So life in Singapore moves at its own rhythm. Everyone wakes up at 2 p.m. on Friday to align with the night race schedule. In the downtime, we see moments that deepen the friendships. Albon pulls out old karting photos with what looks like a child Lando, but could be teenage Lando. He just looks very small, prompting Lando to admit that Albon is one of the reasons he's racing in Formula One at all. Gasly and Lando hit the paddle court, not the combination I expected. And what is also unexpected is this Gasly wins. Lando, of course, blames the racket, the condition, and the fact that he was taking it easy before the race day. The best dynamic of all of them is Leclerc's dynamic with Gasly. Leclerc is waiting for Gasly at dinner, and that's how we know he's not staying in the area because it takes him forever to get over there. And Gasly is late, which Leclerc also mentioned is his usual. I love that his nickname for him is Calamari. I don't know if it's a mock nickname or an actual nickname. And Gasly shrugs it off with a joke, saying that he told the driver to drive like Leclerc, but instead he's chilling. Beneath the banter is genuine appreciation. Both admit it's rare and special to have a close friend in the high-pressure, politics-heavy paddock. And I just want to say, this is the nicest Gasly has looked on Netflix, because if you remember from last season, we had two episodes of his relationship with Esteban Ocon. And just you wait, this is not the last we've heard about this in this season.
I found it very interesting when Leclerc and Gasly were talking about their friendship, about how once you're in F1, it's difficult to trust people. That has to be very isolating. So I think it's great that they are able to have these friendships and then still compete with each other on the track.
Well, speaking of that, I don't know if you remember, I forgot which race it was, but there was a race this year where during the driver's parade, Leclerc told Gasly what tires he was going to use, and Gasly reported that to his team. So I don't know how much trust even they will have afterwards, because I mean, I'm sure if Leclerc said it, it was not going to be a mystery for long, but I just thought it was funny how it was caught on radio with Gasly almost like whispering, "Did you hear what Leclerc said to me?"
I can only imagine when you are the top 20 elite F1 drivers, what that world must look like and how to navigate it. So, you know, well, we will get into that in a little bit more in the next episode, but it is interesting the balance between camaraderie and competition and where Netflix lands its emotional punch. Friendship is easy when you're at the hotel or playing paddle, but once qualifying begins, reality sets in. Gasly ended up P18, Albon P11, and Leclerc's poor qualifying put him in a bad mood. Netflix captured him that evening at C'est La Vie, the rooftop bar above Marina Bay Sands, with his mother and girlfriend, Alex. His mom encourages him to ask the universe for a podium, and Leclerc doesn't even try to pretend to believe it, replying dryly, "If I get something, it won't be a podium."
I went to C'est La Vie when I was in Singapore, and I did not like it. So watching it on Netflix, it was a completely different experience. I think it's because there was almost nobody around, which I think helps to soak up the atmosphere. They were also during the light show, so they could see, and their light show is spectacular. So to see it from the rooftop must be incredible. And I think Netflix puts a lot of money into production values because it made the entire rooftop experience seem so much better than I experienced in real life.
Well, my experience there is actually a really positive one. I enjoyed it when we were there. So
yeah,
it could have just
there
been
sooner,
timing.
Right? Because I was only there in 2023.
Yeah, that's true. I was there in 2017. So maybe it changed, but it was great in 2017.
Yeah.
On race day, Leclerc uses the driver's parade as a study session, scanning faces for confidence, which was very curious when they flashed to no confidence to Lando. It is a small but telling detail, a reminder that even among friends, everyone is quietly sizing each other up, because once the lights go out, the Singapore Grand Prix does what it always does. It shuffles the deck. It is unforgiving. Albon's race ends early with cooling issues. Gasly fights but can't climb far, finishing 17th. Leclerc doesn't make the podium. Just as he predicted, Lando makes an error while leading but still wins comfortably, pulling off a victory that cements him as the episode on-track star.
So in terms of what Netflix missed, the biggest thing is that it was Daniel Ricciardo's last race. The next episode focuses on the dysfunction in Red Bull and Racing Bulls, and there is a focus on Daniel, but it would have been nice acknowledgement in this episode as he is shown flying in with Lando and then kind of abandoned, I guess, in Singapore, figuratively and literally. Another missed moment was not showing how many times Lando made mistakes in Singapore. He hit that wall more than once. I believe it was as many as four times, and still came out very much ahead. Finally, even though they mention qualifying quite a bit in this episode, I would say more than any other, it's only shown in bits and pieces with misleading information because there's no mention of Q1, Q2, Q3. And Russell says the next 90 seconds determines who's on pole, which will not give you enough context if you don't know how qualifying works. Maybe this is just because it was traumatizing to me, as it was for Leclerc. They don't show how he ended up in P9. In fact, they show that Ferrari did not have a good outing with Carlos Sainz causing a red flag by crashing out, and thus being 10th out of the 10 in Q3. But they didn't show that Leclerc's time was deleted for track limits and he ended up P9.
Yeah, they just show him a little grumpy. Which I get it. He seemed very grumpy in Singapore. And honestly, when I'm that hot, I'm grumpy too. So I can understand.
Yeah. Hindsight probably wasn't the best race to kind of get them to be reflective and funny.
No,
and
I would think Miami or Vegas, Silverstone, like Brazil. There's so many other races that...
Oh, Brazil deserves its own episode just for everything else that came with it.
It does. I love the idea of them doing the behind the scenes from drivers' perspectives. I don't know if Singapore was the track to do it at. So I guess we'll see if they do that again. But I don't know. For our superlatives, I'm going to give the most awkward award to George Russell. There is just something about his personality that seems so forced to me. And I know he said, I don't want to say I'm a geek, but in a way I am. So I try to take it with a grain of salt. But I don't know. He just seems so awkward to me in this episode. And then I really felt for him at the end, coming out of the car and just, I mean, you're sick. You're sick because it's so hot. But I don't know. It was a little cringy when he was talking about Carmen and skinny dipping. And it just, I'm like, it's just not funny. No, I think you're trying to be funny and it's just not funny. So to me, he was the most awkward in the episode.
Fair. So I'm going back to most prophetic comment and got to give it to Pierre Gasly. So when they arrived to Singapore, it was raining, but it was the only time during that weekend it was raining. And he says, that's my last hope for that weekend. Please stay like that. It didn't stay like that, but please remember that quote. It will come around in a few races.
Indeed.
The other superlative is best appreciation. And unfortunately, the person for it is George Russell. So the one thing he said about Charles Leclerc was that I got the best hair, but he is the best looking.
George does have nice hair. He does.
So I disagree in both. Like, so I think the person who would disagree with both of them is probably Carlos Sainz, because he definitely thinks he has the best hair.
Carlos, hands down, has the best hair. George has nice hair, but Carlos' hair, you can't beat.
And I think he could give Charles Leclerc a run for his money in terms of best looking, because objectively speaking, I always think of him as the best looking man on the grid.
I don't disagree with you there.
Yeah. So the other funny thing that Russell said in terms of appreciating was calling Bottas a Finnish porn star.
That made me laugh.
See? So sometimes
that one wasn't awkward. That wasn't awkward. That was good. It was well-timed. And I can't remember when in the year, Bottas posts his, he does his calendar to raise money where he usually takes a picture where you see his bum. So I think it was probably around that race.
Makes sense.
Or it could just be the bleached out mullet and the whole vibe that he's got going on in his Instagram content. So, you know, it could be a combination of all of those things.
And that's what I think the beauty of that comment, because it has so many application and it all applies to both tasks. So very well done.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he is that. If you say F1 porn star, there is no doubt in your mind you're going to Valtteri Bottas. We will wrap up today's episode covering episode 8 of season 7, which was titled Elbows Out. This is a high stakes chapter deep inside Red Bull's garage. Christian Horner is wrestling with quite a few painful decisions. Can he bench Sergio Perez to stop the slump? Although Max is comfortably ahead in the Drivers' Championship, Red Bull is on the downward spiral in the constructors. Flashbacks take us through Goodwood celebrations, Suzuka spins, and the rise of Liam Lawson, who's shadowing Ricciardo and maybe forcing a seat change. We'll see Daniel Ricciardo looking subdued back home and Lawson showing all of the prickliness that comes with Max, with very few visible glimpses of Max-like pace.
This episode opens with Christian Horner wrestling over Sergio Perez's performance struggle. Is letting go the only way to stop the downward spiral? Christian, if only you knew. A flashback brings us to Goodwood's 20th-year celebration of Red Bull. Cheering fans, glossy celebration, but Horner's eyes betray doubt. He still thinks Daniel Ricciardo might be the best replacement for Perez, but he wonders whether Daniel still has the fire to scrap in F1 again. And then we cut to Daniel in Perth, Australia, playing with his nephew, having a barbecue with his family. The smile is still there, but he's noticeably subdued and he's less beaming than in his heyday. The quips are just not coming fast and furious as they always had been. So it is a very different Daniel Ricciardo, and it's a little sad to see. It's a glimpse of a man who's drifting from spotlight and maybe reconsidering whether it's all worth it.
This one was such a tough episode for me to watch. But when we were at Suzuka, Daniel spun into the wall during a session. Liam Lawson, visibly tense, places an arm on his shoulder and whispers, "Sorry, mate," as Daniel walks off. That solidarity hints at mutual respect or maybe guilt. Lawson admits that he once thought that in 2023, he deserved the Red Bull seat for 2024, but Ricciardo got it instead since he brought experience to the table. And the subtext is clear. Lawson isn't here to be friends. At Silverstone in the rain, things grow more intense. Tsunoda, maybe unintentionally, labels Ricciardo his main rival, while Lawson silently pressures everyone with sharp focus. Daniel says that he has a scare on a lap and he knows that he should take risks, but if he crashes, that won't do him any favors. Daniel admits that he asks the question now whether it is worth the risk to put the car on the edge, but did not ask the question at 22 or 25. And that was one of the most raw and, as Daniel put it, vulnerable scenes, because you can't have fear. And all the drivers say once fear creeps in, then it's time to be done.
I just want to say one thing. He does say he has a scare, but it's not just at one lap. Every lap he has that scare. And I
Right.
feel like that is way too much for a driver who wants to consistently drive an F1.
Lawson has a chance to be measured against Max Verstappen in a test coming in under 0.2 off of his average lap times. He supposedly gives precise feedback, all of which seems to convince Christian Horner that he deserves to replace Daniel right away, with the possibility of moving to Red Bull to replace Perez in the near future.
The episode builds to Mexico, where Lawson steps into Racing Bull's race seat. Sparks fly almost immediately. After overtaking Perez on track, Lawson flips him the finger, a raw, unfiltered moment of adrenaline and ego. After the tempers have cooled down, Horner admits Lawson might have taken it too far and still has a lot to learn, yet he also acknowledges something deeper. He drives the car like Max. He can handle the pressure. Oh, if he could go back to those words in
Oh,
2025.
hindsight is something special in this season.
Yeah, as I said, Horner and Will Buxton keep bringing the controversy. So Will Buxton says that putting Lawson in the car might echo past rushed replacements where veteran Koreans were cut short. But this guy is desperately fast. He got desperate, all right. And the actual thing he says that until he said it, I couldn't even process. And that was, when has the stand-in ended the careers of two massively respected veteran drivers?
That hit hard for me.
Right?
Very hard.
I just couldn't imagine that of all the people on the grid, it was Liam Lawson.
Which probably doesn't help my dislike of Liam Lawson.
No, but the thing is, the things that both Horner and Buxton's talking about, whether he's so fast, he drives the car like Max, he handled the pressure. We now know that is not true. So I don't know if we saw this at the end of last year, we had the same visceral reaction that this is going so wrong in so many ways. But at this time, this just seems delusion. It's delusion on both of their parts.
It is. And we have said this, and others have said this. Liam's commentary, and I don't know if it's Netflix framing him as a villain, given the fact that he's going to oust Perez and Ricardo, or this is really his personality. And I think this was the difficult part to discern as we're getting our intro to Liam. He was extremely cocky. He came in with no humility. And there is a fine line. You have to have an edge, but there also has to be a level of respect and humility. And he had none of that. And I think when he was making comments about how he deserved the seat to begin with and how arrogant he was, yes, he's fast. Yes, you could even say he's like an early Hamilton or Max with that much confidence. But to flip a driver off, like you're in a racing Bolts, you're in the junior team and you flip off a veteran in the senior team. I'm surprised there was not much more to that than Horner just saying he took it too far. Even last year.
I am not surprised because, as you know, when Horner is behind you, he will go to bed whether you're right or wrong. He will be behind you. That's actually one of his better qualities. Too bad it's spent on Liam Lawson. I think this is what I think is an issue. So you mentioned how that bravado is reminiscent of Hamilton and Max. The problem is he doesn't have that talent.
No, the talent, the raw talent and speed is not there.
But yet, again, you hear these comments where they try to justify that he does. And I'm thinking, is it just trying to justify the choices that they made? Or have they seen something that Liam hasn't shown? So for instance, them saying, oh, he's off 2/10 off of Max's time. Well, great. If you remember just last week when we had Hungary in 2025, poor Yuki Tsunoda on pace was less than 2/10 of Max Verstappen.
Well, I was about to say, if they would have given Yuki the same test, I would have been curious to see what he would have come in at. Because performance-wise, Yuki should have gotten the Red Bull seat, not Liam.
And spoiler alert, he eventually would, and the results are not that great.
Not great. It'll be very interesting to see how Netflix scripts all of that drama in season 8. But let's chat about the things that they missed in Elbows Out. And most of this is, again, around Liam Lawson and how they did not mention when Liam replaced Daniel, which was after Singapore at Austin.
Right. So Mexico was not Liam Lawson's first race. Right. There's also, speaking of Liam getting his elbows out, there was the whole interaction with Alonso that lasted over a number of races that gets completely glossed all over, which is too bad because Alonso did not go quietly in that interaction. He basically kept promising Lawson that he will get him back.
Yeah, one of the other big contenders was Sergio Perez's contract extension, the amount of money and the time that was finalized, which created issues in 2025 for Horner. They also didn't mention that Sergio Perez's father had a cardiac episode when seeing Perez's crash with Sainz in Baku.
I don't understand why they didn't mention it, because that has Netflix written all over it. It's so dramatic.
I know.
And the crash
didn't
looked...
make it in.
Yeah, and the interesting thing about the crash is that I remember when it happened, everyone said, it looks worse than it is. He was actually not injured at all, but the car looked like it was completely decimated. So I can it's very understandable when a father watches the crash, he thinks, oh my God, my son is in this mess that's completely destroyed. But in terms of contract extension, again, another opportunity that I hope Netflix picks up, because lucky them, they got the Christian Horner firing to go through in season 8. And if this is not part of it, I don't know where else would be, because this is another nail in that coffin.
Yeah, that definitely had an impact on the events that took place a couple weeks ago. My superlative for this episode is going to go to most gut-wrenching goodbye. And obviously the winner is Daniel Ricciardo, as Will Buxton brutally reminded everybody he never should have left Red Bull in 2018.
This is not the first time he said it. This is his favorite refrain.
I know, but it's like a dagger through the heart for me as a Ricciardo fan, so I can't even imagine how Ricciardo feels about it. But I did appreciate the fact that Netflix paid more tribute to Daniel's racing career than F1 did for his last race, for the career that he had. I got a little teary watching it. I mean, I obviously am biased. I'm a big Daniel Ricciardo fan, but I thought that hindsight for him, there's so many, oh my God, what if, what it could have, should have gone back and do it differently. I rooted for him so much to have that comeback at Racing Bulls, or to get back into the seat. His personality and charisma and charm is just amazing. It's sad to me, but his sign off seasons 1 through 6, that just got me a little choked up. So that was my superlative. It has to go to Danny Ricks.
Yes, well, Daniel Ric also features my superlatives, but not him directly. But we first start with, again, Christian Horner. The man just keeps delivering gold. And again, it's the most prophetic comment. I feel like from now on until the episode, eventually when they show him leaving, is going to be the most prophetic comment. And that is, to win a championship, you cannot run on one leg. What's interesting about this statement, it's, of course, applies to Red Bull. But this year, it applies to quite a few teams. He also had a quip about Perez, which I thought was very good, and that is that he's in the cauldron of pressure. So, very astute.
Yeah, he nailed that one.
Yeah. The funniest comment was actually said to Horner by his wife, Jerry. And this is during the Red Bull's 20th year celebration, where Horner got the chance to drive an F1 car. And she said, don't crash, no pressure, no donuts. You finally made it to F1.
And there was a lot of laughing and chuckling in the middle of those comments, which I truly appreciated, especially you finally made it to F1.
But finally, we get to the most evil exchange. And for once, Christian Horner is not it. Remember when I said there were other villains that will appear? So this was the exchange between Peter Baer, he was the CEO of eCarbon, which is what Racing Bulls was called last year. I don't know if he still is. And Helmut Marko, who doesn't get as much attention, but probably should. So this is their exchange, with Marko saying, Netflix story is not working. Getting out of the bad stretch and getting into Red Bull, that is the story the Netflix planned. So he is literally gleeful that poor Daniel Ricciardo did not get the redemption arc we all were hoping for him. And the thing is, it's true. This is what Netflix probably hoped. But I don't get why Marco is so malevolent about it. Is he that against Daniel Rick? Obviously, yes. But I also think it's not because Daniel is not performing. I think it's also because Daniel is Christian's favorite. And at the time, Marco and Horner were in the midst of their power struggle, which probably in Horner's mind was behind him after this year, but it wasn't. And then Bear, who, again, I saw for the first time in this episode, called Daniel Rick the legend with a lot of sarcasm, which I didn't appreciate.
I didn't like that whole exchange.
The whole thing was awful. This is what I wanted Netflix to be, like catching all of these interactions that we don't get. Because how about Marco sometimes gives interviews where he says horrible things and then people parse them and remind him, like, for instance, this year he did a whole driver's ranking, which very much blew up in his face with how it all ended up. It is surprising that this is something that we haven't heard of. So Netflix definitely captured something new. The other thing was when Horner was telling David Coulthard, who was previously a Red Bull driver, that he could put anyone in Red Bull, even him. And David Coulthard says that he would do a better job. Now, David Coulthard is a commentator on F1 TV. So I don't know if this tracks with how he sees the second Red Bull drivers as not doing as good of a job as he possibly could have. But now that we've seen more of them and how much they fail, I don't think it's as easy as either of them think. And at least David Coulthard was a driver, whereas Christian Horner, I guess, just talking for the sake of talking.
I think back to Horner's description of the two cars and how the Racing Bull car is more friendly to drive, and the Red Bull car is, what did he say, punchier? How did he describe it? I don't remember the exact wording that he used, but Horner recognized the Red Bull car is much more difficult to drive than the Racing Bulls. Claire Williams talked about the Red Bull driver program and how deep of a bench they have, but you're really not seeing anyone step up to be able to handle that second seat, even now.
Not even close. And it's now even difficult for Max to drive. So, yeah, that did not age well.
Definitely not.
These three episodes gave us novel perspectives of what racing in Formula One entails and showed different team dynamics. And even though the portrayals were more accurate than some we have seen in earlier episodes, and nothing too egregious was left on the cutting room floor, it is clear that with the growing popularity of the sport and the increased visibility in the press and social media, Netflix has to dig deeper to uncover new and exciting revelations that would be as satisfying to established fans as to brand new fans who are not following race weekends too closely.
Thanks so much for hanging out with us. If you enjoyed this episode, don't forget to hit that subscribe button so you never miss an update.
We'd also love to hear from you, whether it's your thoughts on today's episode, your suggestions for F1 books, shows, or movies to explore, or a shout out to your favorite podster. Connect with us on Instagram, YouTube, or X, or drop us an email at readingthegrid@gmail.com. We want your ideas to fuel this podcast, so don't be shy.
Thanks for joining us on Reading the Grid. Keep your engines running and your pages turning. Until next time.